Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I guarantee that every one of us will be touched by this next story. Ryan Corbin was just 24, the grandson of the entertainment icon Pat Boone. He was working on a TV sitcom, Will and Grace. He was living his life to the full, had a pure heart and a pure spirit and rest in God. One day in the year 2000, he called his mum, Lindy, and said this, "I don't know what it is, but God is going to use me in a big way." 12 months later, that happened in a way no one expected. Ryan fell through a skylight, plunging some 10 metres, fracturing his skull, broke his jaw, and mangled virtually every organ in his body. He stopped breathing. Doctors gave him little chance of survival, and then, when he did survive, they declared he'd be a vegetable for the rest of his life. His family, of course, was devastated, understandably asking what on earth God had in mind. How could this be the fulfillment of Ryan's vision of the future? The faith team, as they call them, around him, family, friends, church leaders, held a bedside vigil and prayed like never before. During this time also, Larry King even invited the Boone family onto his CNN TV show in front of more than 50 million people. They were hesitant initially. They then accepted his offer and appeared another three times. A self-declared agnostic, Larry King asked the hard questions, of course, like, why do bad things happen to good people? Time passed and he watched a miracle happen. Ryan was on a long, slow road to recovery and eventually appeared on Larry King's show himself. 12 years on, Ryan is still undergoing physical, speech and occupational therapy. His mum has gained a bit of an understanding as to why this happened. She asked Ryan, "Do you still love Jesus?" He said a definite yes. "Do you still feel his presence?" "Yes." "Do you ever think this really sucks?" He said, "No." "Are you going to get completely well?" He said, "Yes." "Why?" "For the glory of God," was Ryan's reply. His mother is Lindy Boone Michaelis and has just written a book called Heaven Hears about Ryan's story of unseen faith. Lindy, welcome to Open House.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee.
I'm so privileged to talk with you. Thank you so much, Lindy. Ryan's story, your family story, and this 12-year journey has touched the lives of millions of people, we can say that. When Ryan called you on that day in 2000 and said God was going to use him in a big way, what was your response?
Well, it was just an average, everyday kind of catch-up call where he called and our conversation just went on to things that were happening in our lives. And he just was sharing with me a sense that his life, he'd been tapped by God to do something, and he said, "He's going to use me, Mom, in a big way." And I understood that, and I said, "I agree, honey, I believe that." And he stopped me, and he said, "Mom, I mean really big." And I just remember that it made an impact on me because of the way he elaborated on it and said, "You know, Mom, I feel like David, when he was a shepherd, he had the heart of a king. When he became a king, he kept the heart of a shepherd." And he said, "I feel like God has something big, a big influence, and right now I'm just a shepherd. I've got nothing, but I do feel like God has big things for me in the future, and I need to keep the heart of a shepherd."
In your mind and in his, did big equal good?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But, you know, he was just open. He was wide open saying, "I don't think it's going to be that I'm preaching." He said, "I don't know what it is." So he was just an open, willing servant that was saying, "Yes, God, use me."
But it was in an entirely different way.
Right. I'm not going to ever imply that God had planned for Ryan to fall and be injured. I don't think that. But I do know that God had known that Ryan's life was going to be used to point others towards Christ. And we would never have foreseen that Ryan would have to go through this valley to have the attention placed on him. He was pretty charismatic as it is, and people were drawn to him. So this was a left turn, and it really took us all by surprise and just knocked the wind out of us when he had this fall.
Lindy, tell us about your life before the accident. You grew up in a very famous family, your father being Pat Boone.
You know, as I was a young child, I didn't know anything other than that people knew who my father was. Wherever we went, people knew who he was. So we were aware that people loved him. They were fans of his music, and we had privilege living in a nice home in a nice part of the world. But my parents were very grounded, too, and they came from kind of modest beginnings in Nashville, Tennessee. And I remember them saying, you know, when they got married, they didn't have very much at all. And my dad was planning to be an English teacher, and my mother thought she married an English teacher. So the two of them came from really strong Christian roots, family, faith. This whole famous stuff was a surprise to them.
I'm sure. Tell us about your own family's life, Ryan's life before the accident. Where was he?
Well, he was just one of those kids that you just gotta love. It wasn't that he never did anything wrong, but he always understood when he did wrong, and he kind of took the punishment and kind of understood, yeah, I know, you gotta ground me. You could never stay mad at him. And he was just a big love, 6'4" is what he eventually became. But he was everybody's friend. He never had an enemy that I'm aware of, and just a big, warm personality that people gravitated towards. And he was a good student, good basketball player, but mostly he was just a really good heart.
And the day you got that devastating news, take us through what happened and your reaction.
Well, I was on vacation with my husband, Mike, and my son, Tyler, and we were all the way in Spain. And I got a phone call in the dark. I was awakened by the phone ringing. I couldn't remember where I was because I was in an unusual place, and I couldn't tell where the ringing was coming from. It was in another room, so I had to bounce off the walls to go find this phone and then hear my sister's voice. My sister Debbie was looking for me, and I knew, oh, this can't be good. So she told me, Lindy, it's Ryan, and immediately my stomach just clenched up in a tight cramp. And she said he had an accident. He fell. He was going up to the roof of his apartment building, and he stepped on a skylight and fell through it. And I knew that that building was a three-story building, so I knew this was a significant fall. And she said, he's in the hospital. He's being operated on. She goes, all I know is he has a skull fracture, and his spleen has already been removed. But, Lindy, I know you can live without one of those. And the rest of it was unknown. She said, he's being operated on. I think you should come home. So I immediately knew I was going to be packing and getting home as fast as possible. And my husband and Tyler and I just held hands, and we went to God and prayed. And we had to touch where Ryan was in the best way that we could, and that was in the spirit, because I knew it was going to take a while for me to get to him.
Hmm. You prayed. Was there much panic?
You know, I don't know, because I don't think so. I think I was still in a state of, is this real? Am I dreaming? I did feel that cramping in my stomach. It was a physical anxiety. Panic, I wouldn't call it panic, but anxiety, yes. And there was too much unknown for me to know how to feel, but I just knew I need to be with him. So we made arrangements for flights to go home, and everything went smoothly, but even so, it took 24 hours from the time I heard from my sister till getting, you know, landing in LA, with three different legs of the trip and being up in the air without any way to reach out and hear how he was doing. It was a very painful day.
Tell me what his condition was like when you finally got to him.
Well, he had lived through the first 24 hours, and I didn't know it at the time, but they were doubtful that he would even live that long. So he was still kind of hanging by a thread, and I think the hospital was glad that I got there. But we all just were camping out in the waiting room and visiting him and praying that he would survive. That was our main prayer, that he would live. But we weren't even sure about the condition of his brain, because he hadn't been able to be moved to get a CAT scan. He was so fragile that if they had taken him off of various life support machines to go get a CAT scan, he wouldn't have survived that trip. So it was very, very touch and go.
The doctors were very pessimistic, weren't they?
They were. The paramedics had told my mother, who arrived on the scene right as they had taken him into the emergency room, they said, don't get your hopes up. And then the doctors explained his condition to my parents when they were in the waiting room, and they came out and they said his lungs have collapsed. We think he's been without oxygen for a significant time. His spleen burst. He's bleeding. We're giving him transfusions. They listed all of these injuries to his body, and they just said, frankly, people in his condition don't normally make it.
There was an awful lot of prayer going on amongst the faith team.
Yes, yes. We were at one point asked if we wanted the doctors to keep him on the life support because they felt he was finally going to live, but they did not expect him to be able to emerge from this deep coma. And they felt, based on the CAT scan that they eventually got, he wasn't going to have much of a life or any function to speak of. And so they wanted to offer to let life take its course, natural, you know, nature take its course. And we said, you keep doing everything you can, and we're going to be the faith team. You'll be the medical team, and we'll see and let God have the final say. They didn't believe that he would be able to have any communication between his right hemisphere and left hemisphere of his brain, which leaves you with very little ability, period, and any awareness. Or if he had awareness, he wouldn't be able to communicate or move or anything. So we didn't know what was going to happen. We just kind of said, we believe in a God who can heal, and we're going to believe and stand that in faith that God has bigger plans for Ryan.
Did you ever doubt at all, because it was such a pessimistic diagnosis from the experts?
You know, I think we all go through our doubts, and I think we're human beings, and so we made a stand, we took a stand, and then it's up to us also to feed that little mustard seed of faith. And so I was very committed, our whole family was committed to feeding on God's word and his promises and worshiping and spending time in his presence. And that's how faith comes, hearing the word of God. That's our promise. Faith comes from hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So we spent time nurturing that little bit of faith that we had. And it will ebb and it will flow, but the faith was alive, and it was in God, and our trust was in him. And that's what we proclaimed.
At what stage did Larry King come into this story?
Well, I believe it was about 4 to 5 weeks after Ryan's accident. My dad got a call from Larry King's producer saying they knew what had happened to Ryan. Would we like to come on his program, tell his audience, and ask for prayer? And that was very unusual, I think, and an extraordinary invitation to be on an international program and ask the world to pray. And we recognized that. My dad asked me, would I go on with him? I really didn't want to. Everything in me felt like, no, I am too raw. I am just an open wound. My heart is so broken. At this point, it had been 5 weeks, and really Ryan wasn't making any signs of improvement. And I first told my dad, I think you can do it, Daddy, without me. I just don't think I have it in me to be on national television. And then I started thinking about it, and I thought about some of the things I'd read in the Word and things that had pointed me towards it would be the right thing to do. And Ryan would have wanted me to be on Larry's show and talk about our faith. That's what Ryan was all about. He was all about pointing others towards Jesus. So I realized I couldn't let that opportunity go.
Were you struck by how unusual it was, that request coming from a self-declared agnostic as Larry King is?
Yes and no, because it is an unusual thing to invite us to come on and ask for prayer if you're not sure there's a God.
Yes.
But he had been on his show so many times interviewing so many people of faith. He asked good questions, and I think he has a sincere openness, but he just hasn't been convinced. And so we just decided to take advantage of the opportunity. It was extraordinary. And, of course, I remembered Ryan telling me that God was going to use him in a big way. And so it just seemed like, I don't think Ryan's life is over. I don't think this is the end. And this is exactly the fulfillment of what Ryan was expecting. But I thought it could be part of it. And so that was another reason I thought, yes, Daddy, I'll go on the show with you. And it was only for 10 minutes. And they were flooded with response from the audience.
Yes.
So many people wanted to pray and express that they were praying for Ryan and that Ryan would come out of this. And it was overwhelming. And so Larry then asked us on again and again. And about 4 full hours of being on his program over the next year and a half.
It had a huge impact on millions around the world, didn't it?
It did. I mean, my father to this day, as he travels and does concerts, people ask him, how is your grandson? We prayed for him.
Yes.
And people want to know. And I try to keep, you know, updating on him on our website. We have a website that's called ryansreach.com. And we try to keep people up to date because they care.
As people prayed around the world, did you notice a change in Ryan's condition?
You know, I wish I could have said it was fast, and it wasn't. I think part of the journey that we were on was about being steadfast and persevering, and that was also being played out in front of the world as we went on time and time again. Ryan made changes, and he overcame one obstacle after another, but it was very gradual, and it still is going on. It's been 12 years, and he isn't 100% recovered. But he has come so far, and our lives have been glorious in that every day I can remember that the word from the doctor, he's probably not going to make it, or he probably will have no function. And I can go into his room, and we can have a conversation, and he can hug me and tell me he loves me. And so the contrast between what was expected and what is enormous and miraculous.
Tell us about his functioning today, Lindy.
Well, he does talk. It took quite a long time. He didn't utter a word for probably 7 months, and then it would be a silent, single-syllable word that we might say, can you say mom? And you'd see his lips start to move. And then a little more frequently, and then little short phrases, but it was all without any voice because he didn't have the energy. When he was 10 months, after the accident, he finally had an expression. He had a smile. Finally, he could smile. And they were few and far between. And then he got his voice 15 full months after his accident. We heard his voice. And almost 2 years after his accident, we got rid of the feeding tube. So it's been this slow emerging, but now he talks, and he talks a lot, and he says things sometimes that are inappropriate, so I'm not going to say it's all perfect. But, you know, the inhibition and the editing sometimes hasn't come back 100%.
Tell me about the impact on Larry King. He obviously committed himself deeply to this story and had to have been moved by it. How did it impact on him?
Yes. Well, what was really remarkable is on the third hour that we did with him, he actually came with my father, drove an hour to where Ryan was in a care facility to meet Ryan, and brought a crew, and they videotaped Larry coming in and meeting Ryan. Ryan was still non-communicative, but he could shake his hand, and he saw how much healthier Ryan had become, and that he was able to acknowledge that people were in the room. He was conscious. And I think by that time, we probably had a few mouth words, and he was taking some bites of food, and so it was progress. But for him to take an interest, to leave his studio and come all the way, an hour away, to come and meet Ryan, that was remarkable. And I just think he knows that his audience was interested and that it's a universal question. Is there a God? And if so, why do bad things happen to good people? He kept asking that over and over again.
I understand that. What was your answer?
Well, generally, the people that he had on the show with us, they would be people like Max Lucado or Robert Schuller or Rick Warren, even my pastor from the Purpose Driven Life. And they all would say something to the same effect, you know, we live in a broken world. We are not promised a life without problems and without trials and suffering. But we are promised that we will overcome. We are promised that he will go through it with us. And so I'm not sure that's the answer Larry wants to hear, but everybody tried their best to answer that tough question, and I think he's going to continue to ask it until he gets a satisfying answer.
I have no doubt lots of tears have been shed, tears of sadness, but also tears of gratitude.
Yes, and it has been a roller coaster. I talk about it in my book. It's a roller coaster, and there are highs and there are lows. And I wrote this book mostly for people going through brain injury because it is a terribly long and emotional journey because you take a few steps forward and a few steps back. And so, and it's exhausting and very costly financially and emotionally. So I wrote the book so that people can identify with maybe somebody they saw on TV, maybe they're fans of my dad's, maybe they saw us on Larry King, and they're going through something similar, and they just want to know that it's not just them. Other people go through this and come out the other side with a smile and with joy.
Lindy, tell me how it's reframed your thinking about that phrase that he rang you with before the accident in the year 2000. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but God is going to use me in a big way.
Well, I questioned that myself, and I thought, is anything too hard for God? I mean, Ryan lived his 24 years up until that misstep that he took. He lived it very well, and he's written a screenplay that we have that is about the life of Jesus. He touched so many lives that care so much for him. And now we started a foundation, and the foundation is called Ryan's Reach, and we help people with brain injury. But it's also given me an opportunity to write and share his story. And this story is going out internationally. Here we are talking about it in Australia. I see the fulfillment of that promise that God is going to use Ryan in a big way. And Ryan, you know, is still in recovery. He still has a way to go. And people say, well, what did the doctors say? Is he, you know, what's his prognosis? And I go, but the doctors didn't think he was going to wake up. He's gone so much farther than what the doctors predicted.
Yes.
That, you know, there's nothing too hard for God. And whether it be a miraculous, instantaneous healing that brings him the rest of the way, or if we're to journey on and go through natural medicine or Western medicine or just let time heal his brain, he's still healing in significant ways, and God is still able to use him in his precious state that he's in right now.
He certainly has. Lindy Boone-Michaelis, I'm so privileged to hear your story that you've spared us the time to join us on Open House. Her book is Heaven Hears, and the website is ryansreach.com, and we'll post it on our Open House community Facebook page. Lindy, thank you so much indeed for your time.
Oh, thank you. So nice to join you.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.